You're listening to the Therapist Mom Podcast, where private practice and motherhood collide. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajiz, and here's the deal. I'm not here to give you fluff or hustle culture advice. I'm here to give you strategy to build a private practice on your terms, while naming the hard stuff about motherhood and the broken systems we're stuck navigating. If you're ready for honest, practical, and unapologetic conversations, you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. This episode is sponsored by Jane, a clinic management software designed to help you run your private practice smoothly. Choosing an EHR is a big decision, and one of the most important questions I asked myself was, is this software right for me and my practice needs? Jane understands the importance of this question and wants to help you feel confident in your decision to switch. They've put together a whole range of resources to help guide you, including weekly everything you need to know about switching to Jane webinars, step-by-step online guides, and both live and recorded demos. It's all there to help you figure out if Jane is the right match before you make the move. To learn more about Jane, click the link in the show notes to book a free demo. And when you're ready to sign up, be sure to use code ASHLEY1MO to get a 1 month grace period with your new account. Welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about something that I don't think often comes natural to us in our profession as therapists and mental health providers, which is breaking rules. Not the rules of our professional ethics, those we are not breaking. We are not breaking rules that we have to abide by under our license boards, but the unspoken rules of private practice that get passed around within our profession and just kind of adopted like their gospel or truth. And I'm sure some of these, you know exactly what I'm talking about before I even get into them. But you know those conversations that we have with other providers, and you feel like you say, I want to be in private practice, and that somehow in these conversations, they're telling you that there is a right way and a wrong way to be in private practice. But those rules, the rules that they're trying to put on you, they were not made for you. They weren't designed for therapists who are moms and need flexibility and autonomy. They weren't created for women who are trying to build careers and raise families. They're outdated and they're rooted in systems that profit off of self-sacrifice, and they keep us small. They keep us tethered to the expectations of other people and larger systems. So today I want to name four rules that I see many therapists afraid to break when it comes to starting or running their private practice. And I'm going to break these rules down and look at alternatives that are available to these rules. And as I do this, I want you to ask yourself, which of these rules have I been following, or what version of this rule have I been following? And what would it look if I finally let it go? How could this change the way that I run my practice? And then in turn, how would it change things in my personal life? By the end of today's episode, you will not only have permission from yourself to ditch these rules, but you'll also have some practical steps for building or restructuring your practice in a way that works for you. So let's jump in. Rule number one is that you must create your schedule around clients and not yourself. So the rule that we're breaking is that good therapists, and I put that in quotes, but that good therapists bend their schedule to meet their clients' needs. And that in order to have a successful practice, you have to be available when your clients are most likely available or when they really need. My guess is that you probably already have a picture in your mind of what those times are, evenings and weekends. And not only are they those times, but that you as the provider are willingly able to rearrange your life to make sure that your current client or a potential new client are happy, and to make you more appealing to those clients that are seeking services. Now, on the surface, it sounds noble, right? Look at how great and giving and flexible I am in the name of helping people. It's that martyr narrative that's ingrained in us in grad school, community health, community mental health, or agency work. But in reality, it's fast track to burnout and resentment. Especially, we see this in our profession all the time. And I think this is one of the pieces that definitely contributes to that burnout. With therapists who are starting out in private practice, I see them wrestling so much with what their schedule and availability should be. I've heard from many therapists things like, my kid's soccer game is at 5 p.m., but that's my most requested time slot, or I feel guilty blocking it off, or that I should offer nights because what if I can't fill my caseload without those times, or my client works during the day, so I have to have availability for them in the evening or on the weekends. When I first started my private practice, I 100% believed the same thing. I had a schedule where I would see clients well into the evening, even past bedtime, and I would willingly open up appointment requests for odd times because I was worried that if I said no, I can't do that, then what would happen? Would the client leave? Would they want to see a different therapist? I needed money, so I was very accommodating. And truthfully, at the time, I did have the ability to be more flexible in my schedule than I do now. I didn't have kids, and I didn't mind too much opening up odd times within reason. But there were definitely times that I did resent it or I felt exhausted, but I still made my schedule work for them. And then the burnout began. But when I restarted my solo practice after having my first baby, I quickly realized that my time was way more limited than it had been before having kids. But I also was more tired than I used to be, and I didn't want to see clients at the end of a long day of parenting. And I did not want to see people on the weekends because that was family time. That was the only time, really, that my husband and I had together with our baby. So I started to structure my schedule to be times that actually worked for me. And surprisingly, most clients found a way to make it work. And if they weren't able to, I referred them out. And when I would get new clients, I was very clear in my initial consult what my hours of availability were. And what I quickly found was that when a client finds you and they decide that you are the therapist that they want to work with, they find a way to make the appointment work in their schedule. As life has evolved, as different seasons have changed, I have shifted my schedule and availability many times. Currently, with my family's needs and with school drop-off and pickup times, I only have 3 full days of clients, and that's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. with a 1 hour break for lunch. And then one day a week, I have 2 client slots available from 10 to 12. It is very rare that I don't have every slot filled. And so here's the truth. Your practice really does have to fit your life, not the other way around. And when you start with your life, fitting in what you know already exists, school pickups, your own therapy, workouts, downtime, business practice building, then you can build your schedule around that. You're creating something sustainable by doing that. And you will experience less burnout, less resentment, less frustration, and a better balance between home and business. So, what I want you to think about as it relates to breaking this rule around your schedule is if you could completely wipe the slate clean, what schedule would actually feel good to you? If you don't have a piece of paper right now, make a mental note of it and come back to it. But write that down somewhere. That is your baseline. All right, rule number two, that only in-person practices succeed. This is the second rule that we're tossing out, that you are somehow not legitimate unless you have an office and that you see people in person. I cannot tell you how many therapists I talk to who will say, "Well, I really want to do an online practice, but I feel like people won't take me seriously unless I rent a space. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get clients if I only offer online therapy." And honestly, it truly surprises me when I hear that because let me say this clearly, online therapy works and you can have a thriving practice that only sees clients online. I have been doing online therapy since 2014 and started a completely online practice at the start of 2019. Back then, people really did question the legitimacy of online therapy, especially a practice that was only doing online. And honestly, I had coaches telling me, coaches that were like supporting me, they told me that it was going to be near impossible to build a practice that way and that it was going to be really, really hard to make it work if I did try to do that. But my practice was pretty much full already at the start of 2020. And then guess what happened? The world shut down and everyone was forced to go online. As awful as the pandemic was, it did do something good. At least I believe it did something good, that the pandemic proved the legitimacy of working with clients online and the effectiveness of it as a type of therapy. Clients show up, they do the work, and they can get better. With online therapy, accessibility increases. People who struggle to get to an in-person office, people who can't find childcare, people who live in rural areas, military families who have to move, people who travel for work, all of them benefit from being able to see their therapist online. And while it absolutely benefits the clients, I know for a fact that it really benefits the clinician as well, maybe even more. When you see people online, you don't have to pay rent for a fancy office space. You don't have to figure out how to cover the cost of rent while you're still building your caseload. You don't have to factor in a commute into your daily schedule to try to figure out how to add in the extra drive time around school drop-offs and your appointment schedule. You can choose a format for seeing clients that actually fits your life. For me, having my practice completely online means that I don't have to worry about job security and that I can keep working even when we have to move with the Coast Guard. It has given me something that remains stable in a lifestyle that is often so unpredictable. Now, are there clients looking to see people in person? Absolutely. There absolutely are. There are clients who will say, I don't want to do online therapy. And that's their prerogative. They're allowed to want that. But if you don't want to have an in-person office, that just means that that particular client who's wanting to see somebody in person, that client isn't a right fit for you. And I promise that there are so many other clients waiting to work with you specifically you, and that they will be fine seeing you online because you are the right therapist for them. So if you've been doubting whether an online practice is still relevant in this kind of like post-pandemic life, and if you can actually fill your practice only seeing clients online, I am here to say not only can you build your practice only online, but you can have one that thrives. So if you are questioning how you want to structure your practice, I want you to ask yourself, what story have you been told about what quote unquote like real therapy looks like? Who benefits from you believing that story that you can't see clients online? And who loses when you keep believing that? We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter comprehensive connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. All right, rule number three is charging high fees is unethical. This is a big rule I want us to look at to break. I'm going to guess when you heard me say that it's unethical to charge a high rate, I'm going to guess you had some kind of internal reaction or response. And it could be in either direction, a yes, I agree, or no, I disagree with that. This is an issue I've seen other therapists debate about, and I really don't understand why, other than money is just a hot button issue. And so many of us are trained with the belief that therapy is a service, that it's a calling, and that charging more than a modest fee is somehow greedy or goes against our profession. Additionally, I also believe that there is a cultural piece of this at play for us, because especially as women and moms, we have been socialized to believe that our work should be about giving, self-sacrifice, doing things for others out of the goodness of our hearts. And so when I see other therapists going at it in the comments about it being wrong to charge a high fee, and they're commenting about how it is wrong to charge a high fee, you know what I don't typically see? Men. They're not agreeing with that. And you know who I don't often see being questioned about their fee? Men. Through our profession and the expectations of our culture, we have been taught that to charge a fee that values our worth, our experience, and our time is somehow wrong. And especially if we are women, it is wrong. And the medical insurance industry validates that. Why do you think so many therapists end up leaving insurance panels? Because we are not reimbursed the same way that medical professionals are. So when I see our colleagues judging and shaming each other for charging a high fee, and really, like, a high fee is kind of all relative. A high fee to one person could be $100, and for somebody else, it could be $250. But when I see them judging and shaming one another under the guise of somehow that it's unethical, it makes me so angry. We are so good at using our code of ethics as a mirror to kind of hold up to each other, to other therapists that we think are practicing in a way that is wrong, and try and shame them into believing the same thing as us. Are there providers who do things that fall under the category of breaking our code of ethics? Absolutely. And they need to be held responsible and accountable for those things. But telling someone that the fee they charge is not ethical is really more about that person's own experience and narrative around money than it is about anything in our ethical codes. When a therapist determines what they need to charge in order to provide financially for themselves and their family, we should be supporting them and celebrating them and being able to go out on their own and make a living for themselves. Charging a high fee, will that make it that particular therapist and their services inaccessible for certain clients? Absolutely. But it also means that they're not that therapist for that client. Charging a fee that allows you to not be stressed about your finances, it allows you to show up in your work in a more sustainable way. You're not resentful of your caseload or stressed out about paying your bills. The systems around us have already devalued therapists. Insurances pay pennies. Agencies burn people out. Society does not value our work as women. The last thing that we need to do is to carry guilt for charging a fee that reflects the real value and sustainability of our work and allows us to not be stressed about living paycheck to paycheck. And the fee you set is your fee and what you need, not what someone else thinks or says about it. It's what will support you. You get to determine what your fee is, what you need to make. Your fee isn't about that you're worthy enough or that you're good enough. Your fee is about your capacity and your sustainability in the work that you do. So, what would it look like to charge a fee that actually supports your family and your future? What fears come up when you even think about that? Jot those things down or come back to that question. And finally, rule number four is that you must accept every referral, that a good therapist never turns people away. Many of us have worked in community mental health, and how many of us were handed a new case by, a supervisor or somebody, and that immediately internally we went, oh, hell no, but we had to accept that client and work with them anyway. When we are coming out of agency work, it is hard to let go of that mindset that you have to work with everyone that knocks on your door. And when you're starting out and just trying to build a caseload and make some money, you get a referral and you feel like you have to take it, even if the client isn't a good fit. When I started out in private practice, that was absolutely the way I operated. You called and wanted an appointment? Sure. Let's see where I could accommodate and make space in my schedule for you. I took everybody. But there were definitely clients that it didn't take me long to quickly realize that, oh, this is not a good fit. And I would dread those appointments and was so glad when they would eventually discharge or that when they eventually just like wouldn't reschedule. And when I reflect back, that really wasn't fair to the client or myself. I probably wasn't able to support them in the way that they needed because I either didn't have the type of specific training or support that they really need. Or I wasn't showing up my full self and being able to be present in the sessions in the ways that they really deserved. Making a decision to turn a potential referral away can be so hard. But when you have a caseload that is truly aligned with your ideal client that you want to work with, it makes going to work not feel nearly as draining. It creates alignment within you, yourself, and your business. Having that initial consult with a new client and then saying, hey, after hearing a bit more about what you're looking for, I'm not sure I'm going to be the best fit. So let me get you some additional referrals is the best thing that you can do for that referral and for yourself. So, what I want you to think about as it relates to breaking this rule is who would you stop saying yes to if you believe that you had full permission to only take aligned clients? What would that feel like? And who would you want to say yes to and to let go of? So let's kind of recap the rules that we're breaking today. The first one, you don't have to schedule around your clients. You get to make a decision of what your schedule is and what works for you and makes your life feel more sustainable and grounded. Number two, you don't have to see clients in person. If you want to have an online therapy practice because that is what works for you, don't worry if you have people reaching out saying, well, I was really wanting to see somebody in person. Cool. They need to go see somebody else. You will get clients that want to work with you regardless of where you see them in person or in office. Rule number three, that somehow charging high fees is not ethical. You are allowed to charge the fee that you need to in order to make your practice financially sustainable. No one else gets to dictate that for you, except for you and your financial needs. And number four, you don't have to accept every referral. It is okay to say no. And I know that that can feel really scary, especially when you're starting off, but finding the clients that are most aligned with you and the area that you want to focus on is going to be so much better and make your practice much more sustainable than taking a referral that you know is just not a good fit. These rules are not helpful and they don't support us in building and growing aligned practices that support us and make room for our own needs. These rules were not made for us. And holding on to them really just keeps us small and more contained in like some specific box. Breaking these rules, letting go of them is not reckless, but it's how you create a practice that actually works for you, for your family, and for your clients. And so if you're sitting here thinking, okay, I want to build a practice that fits me, but I don't know where to start, that's exactly why I created my free download called Your Ideal Practice Blueprint. It's a guide to help you design a practice your way, figuring out what do you want it to look like? What is a schedule that fits you? This is not cookie cutter advice. It's going to look different for everybody, but it's helping you to align to these rules. So you can grab it by either going on Instagram and commenting blueprint, or you can head to the link in the show notes to grab it there. And I would love to hear from you. Which of these rules have you been holding on to? Which one are you ready to break? Meet me over on Instagram, send me a DM, share this episode in your stories. Let me know which rules you are breaking up with, whether they're ones here or other ones. Start a conversation with other therapists, with me, about how can we let go of these rules so that we are creating practices that are more in alignment with our needs. Thank you so much for being here today, and I will see you back here next week. Thanks for listening to the Therapist Mom Podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, I'd love for you to share it with another therapist mom who needs it. Be sure to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And if you'd leave a 5-star review, it helps more therapist moms find this space. For resources and ways to work with me, head to raisetoempower.com and check the show notes for all links mentioned today. I'll see you back here next week.